Mini episode 847 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge mini episode number 847. This is FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris here. I am joined by two great professionals today, both from Media Village. One, our longtime FDH Lounge dignitary, Simon Applebaum, who is a contributor over there. Another one, a gentleman who we have been also privileged to have on the show a number of times now, Stuart Elliott from Media Village. A privilege to have them both on to break down the 2017 TV Upfront season. So I'd like to welcome both of you to the show. Stuart, it's good to have you in. How are you today?
Good. Thank you very much.
And Simon, pleasure as always, my friend. We've been doing this, I think, since about 2009 or so. Great to have you back to do this again.
Yes, we have. And a pleasure to return by gentlemen, and a pleasure to be with you, but again, Rick, we're all good, Stuart, because we're both meeting those colleagues, and it's dynamite to have us both aboard.
It's great to get two pros on from Media Village, quite a talent clearinghouse over there, with so many of the fine correspondents over there, and I'm very interested to get the perspective of both of you on this year's TV upfronts, as well as the new fronts. This season has really taken on in the last 5 to 8 years, much more of a varied kind of a tone. And I'll start with you, Simon. Your column that you had, of course, people can find that right there on MediaVillage.com, of the best upfront and new front moments of 2017. Sort of an interesting primer for me as I was looking through this as far as getting the discussion started. And a lot of noteworthy things as far as the presentation of this. And I was really sort of taken aback in reading this by the progress that has been made by Hulu. I'm a Hulu subscriber, and I'm also a Netflix subscriber, and it tends to be, Hulu tends to get viewed a lot of times as sort of a poor second relation a lot of times to Netflix, which I think is kind of unfair in a lot of ways. But among the many great points in your columns, and feel free to hit as many areas on that as you want to, but I was really interested in what you had to say about Hulu and how they're really making great strides forward.
One of the reasons, Rick, why they're making a great stride forward to a lot of people, too, in that arena is because they come to a big conclusion, and that is that we are now in an era where the American public is embracing the smart television set and the smart TV device. I'm talking about sets made by the likes of Samsung, by LG, Vizio, et cetera, as well as devices like Roku, Apple TV, Amazon Fire, et cetera, et cetera. They allow you to do everything from watch internet programming to order merchandise to read ebooks, depending on the amount of the versatility of apps that you get. Apple TV by itself has now over 10,000 apps, including the ability, for example, if you're an Amazon Prime customer, to order any Amazon merchandise you like. And by the way, earlier today, Amazon Fire TV announced that they're now offering the same service to their Amazon Prime customers. So it really is very clear that, yes, we are part of the smart TV situation. We realize that 60% of our U.S. households now have a smart TV set of device. Increasingly, that's how they're watching us, or watching Netflix, or watching Amazon, et cetera, et cetera. And we've got to embrace that. And they certainly did by not only increasing the amount of original form they're doing, but also by announcing we're going to launch interactive ads this fall. We're going to launch e-commerce, where if you watch a spot for an upcoming movie, you can use your remote control, maybe even use your Siri or Alexa, what we call now these AI or artificial intelligence devices, and order your ticket on the spot from wherever you are in the United States. YouTube made it very clear that they're going to be launching more commercial ad-supported programming, as well as the YouTube Red, their smart TV service, more original programming, first unscripted and scripted. And we just saw this up and down the line. Crackle increasing the amount of scripted programming. Fullscreen announcing what for, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The bottom line is that we are in the smart TV and smart TV device society, perhaps to stay. And I don't think that since the upfront, sad to say, it's also becoming very clear that we are not talking about this as much as we ought to. Great case in point, unfortunately, today's keynote of the Apple Worldwide Developer Conference in Silicon Valley, where Tim Cook, the head of Apple, put Apple TV front and center, but only for 2 minutes, and then spent 15 or 20 minutes on Apple Watch, etc., despite the fact that Apple TV has 10,000 apps, millions of people buy Apple TV and use it as opposed to the Apple Watch. I bought this with a monumental gap by Tim Cook, by the PR people at Apple, and it follows what has happened a couple weeks ago when Google, on the other developer conference, similar conference that happened for that company, did nothing about Chromecast. I think it's time that we in journalism start focusing on the smart TV, smart device, that every TV conference and every technical conference focus on this, and it's time that we call on Apple and Amazon and Google and the smart TV makers, etc., to come out of the closet, stop acting like smart TVs and devices that exist, and finally do this. Because we're now seeing more and more, thanks to the upfront of digital content, new fronts, there is a realization that this is a society that we are now involved with, and be for good.
Well, Simon, I have to say, so much of what you were saying there, I can't wait to ask Stuart about from his perspective and his long experience covering the advertising industry. But I have to ask you a follow-up based on what you were saying towards the end there. When you're talking about Tim Cook, Apple TV, is there a sense out there, and of course he would not be the only titan out there who's guilty of this, is there a sense, do you think, of a little bit of looking at traditional TV as a 20th century type device and everybody's wanting to be cutting edge, and when you're talking about the Apple Watch and all these other ways, and we're so busy telling ourselves that we're consuming media in new and different ways. And look, I've been watching a lot of stuff on my phone and my tablet the last couple of years, so I'm like everybody else. But is there a little bit of a bias against viewing the television set in the living room as being a dominant device continuing to go forward in terms of the smart applications and the other ways that you can tap into it?
I don't think there's as much a bias, Rick, as much as it is an absence of getting the information out there and letting people know this is what's going on, letting the press know what is going on. And in the case of TV industry conferences and conventions, whether it's the next TV show that's coming next week for Broadcasting Cable, or tomorrow's Cultural Insights Forum, which has done some very interesting research, by the way, about how the multicultural community is using smart TV sets, and I'm looking forward to that tomorrow morning, or Cable Practice TV Nation Summit, or CE Week, which is next month, which over the last 4 years has not done a single panel on the issue of smart TV sets and devices. I think it's just a case of this big gap that we are not filling. And it would really help if the Apples and the Googles and et cetera, and Amazon of the world would start talking about it in public and not just do it at a conference in Silicon Valley for a few minutes at a time. Why can't Tim Cook or any Q, the head of Apple TV, the next time they come to New York, do a press conference at an Apple store and showcase the new apps and let us see what's going on. Bring the app developers together. Let us have a chance to talk with the press. Do events at Petcom. Amazon should be part of that with Amazon Fire, as well as TV set makers who are now putting Amazon Fire in their TV sets. And guess what? We're now seeing Siri and Alexa being incorporated in both these sets and these devices. And we need to hear it. We need to debate and discuss what's going on here. Remember something else, too. These devices are software-driven. They can be upgradable just like a snap of a finger. And we don't know the ultimate capacity or capability. This may be the way we see virtual reality and augmented reality. This may be the way we see choose-your-own-adventure programming. This may be the way that we see, finally, home banking, home medicine, et cetera, to the nth degree we've been talking about for years. But we've got to start the dialogue going, and I think it is an all-out, full-court press effort by journalists, by the TV industry, by the consumer electronics industry, and by the set makers and the device makers themselves to be willing to get out there and let us know what's going on.
Very well said, Simon. I think those are very perceptive points that you're making there. And, Stuart, as I teased it a second ago here, I want to get your thoughts and a little bit on what Simon was just talking about there, but to the broader points that he was talking about earlier, when we're looking at some of the ways that Hulu is leading the way in terms of monetization of TV, from your perspective of covering the advertising agency over a long period of time and knowing that they are a very data-driven type of industry and that they like to have things sort of proven to them before they go dip their toes in some new water to any kind of substantial degree. What's some of the chatter that you are hearing and that you may have picked up upon during the Upfronts and New Fronts events in terms of the advertising agency and how much they are perceiving the short-term upside to things like what Hulu is doing, incorporating virtual reality into advertising and other avenues like that?
Well, I think that, I mean, it's a cliche to say that we're at a crossroads because it seems that every year we say we're at a crossroads and then we're really not at a crossroads because much of the same continues to take place in that the advertisers continue to pour billions and billions of dollars into traditional television. But clearly there's a sense that the cool kids, if you will, are the ones pushing for the new ways of doing business, for the new ways of buying and selling. And I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that the younger demographic that the advertisers are so interested in is making the change. As you said, the idea that watching TV in the living room has some sort of a stigma attached to it. I mean, millions and millions of people do that every night, but you know, you would think that from the way it's discussed that that these people are putting on their goggles and cranking up their Model Ts instead of sitting down to watch a TV show in the way people have been watching them for 60 years. I don't know. It there's a lot of pulling and tugging. I mean, some of the options, the new options, are very exciting, but if $5 are going to be spent on virtual reality advertising in the coming year, I would be surprised. And some of the streaming options, there's no advertising accepted. And what do you do with that? Or there's a two-tier system where the streaming service has an advertising option, and then if you pay extra money, you can opt out of the advertising, which is telling everybody, oh, you know, the cool kids avoid the advertising, and you're a chump if you watch it. And I don't know what kind of message that sends to the advertisers and the agencies in terms of, gee, we really want your money, but we're offering another option to our customers so that they can avoid your messages. I don't know. I mean, it's all over the place right now, and that's some of what makes this so interesting to keep track of and to keep watching is that there are all these cross currents, and slowly but surely, the streaming and some of the new ways of consuming content are clearly gaining momentum. But at what point does the tipping point take place and the advertising move into that area like it has for decades and decades in the traditional TV?
Well, very well said, Stuart, and I think, again, not enough people are grasping the point that you're making there because it's a very salient one. I can tell you, you know, as far as like in my own case, my old square white dad, the only streaming he's ever done, basically, is when I got him a Roku stick, and now he's sort of open to doing stuff on his TV set. And, you know, that's how it is for a lot of people out there, particularly the older people in the population who aren't as likely to want to watch something on their phone or their tablet or their computer. So your point is very well made that traditional TV is anything but obsolete in this climate. But what we've been seeing in the last couple of years, and I'll start by asking you this, Simon, I'm very interested to pick both of your brains on this, is that when you get into advertising, when you get into the areas that are perceived to be DVR proof, that would be, of course, live events, which 9 times out of 10 seems to mean sporting events, as those are the predominant ones that are out there on TV. And from what I was gleaning you have a variety of different ways that these were presented at the upfronts this year. Fox obviously went all in on sports at their thing there. They're very proud of picking up Big Ten football. I understand that coaches Meyer and Harbaugh were a part of their presentation in terms of the Big Ten being on Fox. And on the other hand, NBC, from what I was gleaning, did not do as much along the lines of really pumping up their sports coverage out there, notwithstanding the fact that they've got the Super Bowl and the Olympics. It's not something, obviously, that's downplayed, but they didn't, from what I'm gathering, beat the drum as hard as Fox did on that. So I want to get your thoughts on this, Simon, and not least of which the elephant in the room here that we're looking at in terms of world events here. I hate to say this, but I think we all know it's true. The Olympic Games that are most potentially the most likely to be canceled that we've ever seen. Any kind of outbreak of war in Korea in the next year, at least before the Olympics, and we're not even going to see an Olympics there. So your thoughts on, Simon, on where the landscape is right now with TV sports, advertising, and the sell to the advertisers?
Rick, it's all over the map. Because for one thing, you have an NFL situation that's very, very fractured. And there's going to be some decisions, I think, maybe not this decade, but certainly next, in terms of the rights fees. The rights fees are certainly impacting the audience. In terms of the fact that, for example, you have ESPN with Monday Night Football, ratings have not been good the last couple of years. We just had them, ESPN, lay off 100 on-air people. We're not just talking about, we're talking on-air people, including some folks you would not have expected would have been taken off the air. I think there's going to be a lot of concern about, for example, the college football bowl games. I think there's too many college football bowl games right now, made them meaningless. They don't, they put on teams, for example, that do not deserve to go to a bowl game because they have 6-6 records, which is breaking even, or even 5-7. That's, why should they be rewarded for having a lousy record? One of the things that again, depends on the sport. The NBA is doing quite good for now. The NBA finals, in fact, have been solid. Even the first game, the Cavaliers and the Warriors, was 5% in viewership below last year. The game on Sunday last night was actually ahead of Game 2. Obviously, we'll see what happens when the Warriors decide to sweep the series, which would really be something, and historic, by the way, for the NBA, that team, the Warriors, or it goes to full seven. Sometimes rights fees, I think, have a lot to say in terms of the kind of exposure when we see more games go to cable, and maybe just the big things like the Super Bowl go or stay on broadcast. Or maybe share the Super Bowl. We get an interactive version on one network or service, and the broadcast that we've seen for years on the rotation of CBS, NBC, ABC, and then Fox. Remember, with the Olympics, it's not just one network anymore. You now have other networks, multiple networks from NBC, Universal, Dominion, Primetime. This past summer in Rio, you had NBC, FN, put on the games in prime time while NBC was doing their thing. CNBC also for a while, too. And on the Spanish language side of things, quite interesting, you had for the first time NBC Universal, now Universal, running the games in prime time in Spanish. And I thought they did a very, very good job of it. There's two cases that used both Telemundo and Universal to run two different events simultaneously, along with NBC and so forth, which would have been unheard of, by the way, just Olympics or so ago. It's very dicey. You got to get the price fees in your tournament. If the league gets greedy, I think you're going to see some cutbacks. And also, I think there's going to be some decisions about the amount of ad time. I thought the way the NFL ad, the NBA is going, you're now seeing, rather than like a 30-second break, you're seeing 3, 4, 5 breaks. And it's like the sports programming is getting the same issue that other programming is, which is these commercial breaks are way too long. And if you're like the last advertiser in the pod, you end up with the lowest audience of that particular break. It's been very difficult. But I think that some sports will survive, but I think you may see a lot more stuff go to cable, maybe some stuff go to streaming, Netflix or an Amazon, or a Hulu, or a Cracker might be more prone to taking sports, or even a Facebook or Twitter. Don't forget Facebook wants to get into the original plumbing business, and so does Apple. And they certainly have the bucks to do it.
Well, those are excellent points. I have to say, the mention of the NBA Finals as a lifelong resident of America's North Coast, that comes with no small amount of sting right now, as my beloved Cleveland Cavaliers are facing that very steep 0-2 deficit, much steeper than the 0-2 one of a year ago, of course, because of Kevin Durant. So we shall see on that. But, Stuart, the one thing...
What's that old joke, the Cavaliers have the Warriors right where they want them?
I did a guest spot with good friend Joe Stazak last night on 97.5 in Philadelphia, and we were talking about this very subject, and I said if they lose tonight, I said everyone's going to make the comparison to a year ago, but there wasn't a Kevin Durant a year ago, so there truly is no comparison to be made. So, no small amount of sting on that subject. But, Stuart, I have to ask you, in terms of what Simon was saying, I got to think that a guy that's worked your side of the street for as long as you have, for as much knowledge as you have of the advertising business, you must have some very strong thoughts on this, because I think we're at the point in time here. I would like to think we're at the point in time where there is a consensus out there that there is just this vast overweening bubble in terms of sports rights fees. It is not sustainable. Guys like Jerry Jones might be in a safe room sucking his thumb saying, no, it's going to be okay, but we know it's not. It's unsustainable. That ESPN NBA deal was obsolete the minute it was signed. So when these
right,
deals come
think,
up...
I think that we're in sort of an odd period right now because most, if not all, of the major rights were all signed and locked up for quite some time now.
That's right.
So I don't think that this is going to come up as an issue for several years with any of the major sports. So it's certainly fine to stand on the sidelines and rant about how much everybody overpaid for these rights when they signed these deals. But the proof is going to be in the pudding when the renewals come around, and that won't be for a while. It doesn't look like anybody's going to do one of those early renewals like they do sometimes with the Olympics and some of the other ones where they don't wait for the expiration date before they re-up at some insane amount of money.
That's right. But I want to ask you a follow-up, though, because in terms of that, again, we're only a couple of years away. I think it's the first part of the 2020s, very early in the 2020s, when you're going to see the NFL come up, and then a little bit later, the NBA and some of the other big bananas out there. But they're going to be coming up again. MLB, I think we can already read the tea leaves here and see that ESPN is not going to be as willing to shell out for their continued rights when they're now basically more or less bootlegging programming off of MLB Network for baseball and cutting their coverage back to the bone. So I'm wondering, in terms of tying it into what we were talking about before, Stuart, is this one of these things that's maybe going to hasten the mass adoption of people viewing things on different platforms? Like, for example, if Amazon was to get, say, a slice of the NFL games or something else like that, I'm wondering if this is maybe going to hasten one of these other things stepping forward. Remember that there was essentially no Fox Sports in the United States before 1994. Then they get the NFL. Everything's kind of different. We learn to start watching stuff there. It's a bigger leap to watching things on a different platform, but with smart TV, I'm wondering that if they're going to see that possibly some of these tech companies as the ticket to getting wider adoption.
Well, I mean, if you remember when Fox jumped into the football business, that was the glory hallelujah moment for the NFL, because suddenly the rights that were that they were selling were suddenly worth so much more because Fox was willing to pay incredibly extra amounts of money in order to get into the football business. So maybe here we are thinking, the days of wine and roses are over for the leagues, and then suddenly some of these tech companies that are anxious to start streaming sports on their platforms will come in and save all the leagues from the networks that hold the rights running away because they're not going to be able to afford higher prices.
Yeah. Exactly. It's going to be very interesting to see if about 30 years later, past this prologue, and if we do end up in a situation where the NFL goes to another place to try to recoup or at least hold on to their money, and that will be a fascinating kind of a picture here. I know that in terms of a subject here, Simon, that is near and dear to you, that is something that we cover every year when we're talking about the upfronts, that is, of course, diversity in the programming there. And again, as far as the way that shows are laying out their lineups in terms of the diversity in front of and behind the camera, what's your sense this year in terms of from your scorecard, if you would mark it down as any kind of great leaps forward?
Well, I'll tell you something. It's better than it was even a year or two ago. In the fact that we are seeing more diversity behind the camera than ever, more in front, we are seeing a lot more independent producers and directors and writers get a first shot at television, and we're actually seeing more and more people, whether they're playwrights or directors or novelists, get into television as not just the creator but the executive producer of shows. It's really, really something. A new example, by the way, USA Network has a show coming up called The Sinner, which I saw a preview of the pilot this past Saturday, the Split Screen Festival going on at IFC Center this week. Antonio Campos, I believe it, Latino, directed that pilot. He's an independent director. It's his third television job. It's stunning. And Jessica Biel, I think, is going to get an Emmy nominee next year for her performance. And that's one of the companies. I think it was on that cross current. There's a lot of currents. This is one of them, is diversity. And I think that we are definitely seeing more efforts to get more women, more people of color, gay, lesbian, et cetera, into the medium. I am concerned, though, that we may have a couple steps back. I thought American Crime on ABC was marvelous this year, the last three seasons. With John Ridley and Michael McDonald, everything that program has done has really been groundbreaking, particularly behind the scenes. I'm sorry that ABC canceled it. It was definitely borderline the ratings. But I give ABC credit for doing it. Just hope to say we'll put another show on that will expand what American Crime did. I'm very concerned about Underground, the WGN America series, the episode with Harriet Tubman giving a speech for a full hour before I was just played with by Aisha Hines, who I think is definitely a shoe-in for a Best Supporting Actress Emmy nomination. The episode, by the way, for writing and directing, it was canceled by WGN America, which was out to, was parent publisher media about to sell itself to Sinclair, the biggest TV station owner. I know that there's an effort this week to try to get the show on another network, whether it's BET or Hulu or Netflix. I hope somebody steps up. But I'll tell you this, we are seeing more and more shows. And Netflix, by the way, I think has been incredible of late, with shows like Dear White People, which shows like Orange and Black, which shows like
Certain Reasons Why. There's no advertising on Netflix. There's none.
Yeah.
Whatsoever.
Yeah.
Every time somebody rants and raves about how wonderful a Netflix production is, it's another stake in the heart of the advertising business.
Right. It's like HBO in that sense.
But third, what Netflix is doing, though, which I think is having an impact on cable TV in particular, but also a little bit on broadcast, is telling people, hey, guess what? There are people who are going to watch maybe a show you never thought you would put on the air, like a Stranger Things, like a 13 Reasons Why, like the revival of One Day at a Time, like the OA, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I think we're seeing the cable networks really respond, whether it is TNT, which is going to try to put together a Ridley Scott night of programming of science fiction, whether it's sci-fi, whether it's USA with a program like The Sinner, which is commercially supported, whether it's TNT with Will, the Young Will Shakespeare drama coming on in July, we're starting to see a movement toward it because
I agree that the streaming services that don't have any advertising are certainly putting the cable and the ad supported media up on their toes. There's no doubt about that. But the question becomes at what point if all the most wildly heralded and most acclaimed productions are on non-ad-supported platforms. Where does that leave the advertisers? Because just because the cable and broadcast executives decide to greenlight unconventional shows to try to compete with Netflix and Hulu, that doesn't mean those shows will be successful or that people will want to watch them or that advertisers will want to buy time.
Well, Stuart.
Yeah, yes and no. Yes and no. Great example, This Is Us. NBC's series, one of the, I think, the great success stories of the whole television season. Wonderfully done series, very, very different. One that really, I think, had an outstanding cast, great writing, great directing, that NBC probably would not have taken a year or two ago. But I think I can credit Netflix a little bit for having This Is Us on. And I'm happy, what I'm not happy about is that there wasn't any follow-up, that we didn't see NBC take on more shows like This Is Us, which has a very diverse cast and very diverse behind the scenes. ABC was speechless. Good comedy that includes a disabled person in a key role. That was actually said by the executive producer, by the way. It was based on that person's involvement in a situation with that kind of family. We know the broadcast networks can do it. American Crime is a great example of that. Modern Family is a great example of that. This Is Us is a great example of that. And I'm a little disappointed that the broadcast networks didn't go more toward that kind of offbeat comedy or that kind of a unique drama, that they didn't encourage more of that in their pilots as well as what they picked.
Well, one thing I want to circle back to here, I want to ask a follow-up on a point that you were raising, Stuart, a very good one as far as ad-supported versus non-ad-supported. I have never had a subscription to HBO. Some series I have watched subsequently on DVD and enjoyed them, like for Deadwood, for example. But in the last year or so, once my cable company coerced me into taking Showtime and Stars, long story short, they said they were going to hike me regardless, but I could have the channels if I wanted. So I've gotten into watching Billions. We've really, really enjoyed it. So again, I see that as being exactly parallel to what you're talking about here, because you've got the platforms essentially, whether it be cable channels that are premium ones that are ad-free, whether it be Netflix or anything like that, it's all the same really as far as the ad industry goes. So in that regard, again, HBO has been around for decades. The premium TV era, as far as premium shows, is still only about 15 to 20 years old. So they've had a while to kind of get used to it here. But there has been a spike, obviously, with the explosion of programming that's been on Netflix, other streaming services as well, and more that will be coming out in the future. I had heard that Overstock.com was going to be doing a streaming service at some point. I'm not sure where that stands presently, but there's only going to be more of this as far as entities, and I don't know if they're going to be ad-supported or not.
Did you say Overstock.com?
I thought I read that somewhere, Stuart. Yes, I did. I thought I read
what
that.
What would it be like? All rejected pilots and the networks don't. Hey.
Number one, that's a great line. Number two, hey, there's a lot of rejected pilots I'd probably watch, because there's a lot of them that probably had at least some decent buzz to them, I got to think, on some level. But is this a thing that, do you think the ad industry, I mean, it would be overstating it to say that they're worried about that and that there's a potential for marginalization
there.
But
it's like you said, I mean, they've been... The ad industry, the idea that there are other things to watch on television that didn't have commercials in them, that's been something that the advertisers and the agencies have had to contend with for decades because of HBO and Showtime and Stars and
right.
All the other pay cable. Now it's on steroids with streaming, with the idea that A, it's on the devices. B, it's so cool and hip, and woe be unto you if you tell your friends that you watch something on terrestrial television like a troglodyte does. You might as well move to Boca and sign up for the early bird dinner if you dare to tell somebody that you still watch regular television. So, I mean, that's been a problem for Madison Avenue for many, many years. And they've obviously worked their influence on the networks to come up with more interesting content for viewers, both in terms of broadcast and ad-supported cable. But the streaming services and the incredible amount of publicity and attention that they're getting, I mean, is as much kudos as HBO and Showtime have gotten over the years for The Sopranos and for Game of Thrones and for Billions and for Shameless and all these other things. I mean, what Netflix is getting it seems to me is like an infinite number of times more than that in terms of all the white hot heat of publicity.
Absolutely. Well, and go ahead, son.
And something else that they say about Netflix is that they're at the point now where they don't have to sometimes publicize shows, and the audience finds them. Stranger Things, classic case of a show that had zero, nada, publicity by Netflix, and it became a huge hit for them. 13 Reasons Why, another example. The OA, another example. These were all shows Netflix put on with no publicity whatsoever, no marketing support, no promotional support, and the audience finds it. But a couple of other quick comments that I thought were very interesting about this upfront new front season. First of all, Viacom, which is a very interesting company in crossroads right now. Viacom, the new CEO, Bob Bakish, now has the six networks that they're calling core because they will be showcased globally. Nickelodeon, Nick Jr., Comedy Central, MTV, BET, and was never Spike, what will be the Paramount Network. It was very interesting to see which networks did events and which networks did not. Either MTV did not do itself any good by canning its long-running upfront for years. One of the better stage, by the way, I might add. Also, it was very interesting to see how VH1 and CMT and Logo and TV Land, networks that have done very well with language scripted television, how they were going to take on this whole issue of, well, maybe we're not going to get the resources to do original programming. Maybe we're going to have to do all unscripted, et cetera. And I think it's been interesting to see how they've tried to play themselves up. For example, CMT with Nashville, which has done very, very well for them. Or TV Land with Younger, but having to see two of their other shows be moved next year to the Paramount Network. And how Paramount Network is trying to become some of this new HBO, this new commercial HBO Netflix kind of thing in terms of the performing choices that they're making off the bat. And one or two other things, too. One is Spanish language television. I think we are seeing a crossroads right now with that whole idiom. That whole genre. I think we've seen the end of telenovelas in primetime wall to wall. I think the telenovelas are going to start coming out. They're going to be more relevant. They will be produced more in the United States. They're going to be produced with themes that are relevant, whether it is immigration, whether it is just living or simply day-to-day life. We will see more U.S. Latinos, writers, producers, directors involved, actors be involved in the shows. We'll see more weekly dramas. I thought that one of the best shows this year was Netflix's collaboration with Univision. It was announced last year called El Chapo. It's doing very well on Sunday nights. Univision, by the way, is now launched at 8 p.m. They take it out of the program at 8 o'clock. They're now doing unscripted comedy competition shows. They're family friendly. They're so far doing very, very well. Telemundo is doing some interesting things, too, with their schedule. Plus, you have Effect America, for example, which next year is going to do a mini-series called The Wall, which is going to be very unusual in terms of its format, and yes, it is going to deal with the whole issue of immigration, illegal immigration, and what President Trump wants to do along the border.
Those are some excellent additional thoughts, Simon. I certainly wanted to get them from you. A point that you were making there as well, I certainly find interesting as far as some networks finding the balance now between original programming and other forms that they've had. I think that sort of ties back to what we were talking about with the premium cable networks, because while HBO and Showtime have been around for decades, they've sort of gotten, and other ones like that, they've sort of gotten redefined in the last 20 years or so. With a lot of the original programming. And I have to say, when I got Showtime and Stars, and I say that not to slam them, because I'm sure other premium networks aren't any better, the days when movies would be on there not long after being out of the theaters, let's say I was just a little bit underwhelmed. Times are not what they were, I think, a long time ago in terms of second-run movies being on the premium networks and the like. So a lot of networks right now are really kind of refining their business models, and it's a turbulent time as is. But as Stuart, you pointed it out, it's always a turbulent time. It's always, every year, it's different stories of things. There's always things that are in flux. So I want to turn to you, and similar to what Simon was saying there, get some of your additional thoughts on this year's upfronts and new fronts and where we're going, generally speaking.
Well, I think one of the bigger issues is going to be this whole question of reliability and trust, and whether the broadcasters and cable networks and more traditional TV outlets, video outlets, will be able to take advantage of the problems that the newer video rivals are suffering vis-a-vis the idea of not being 100% able to control where your commercials run and the environment that they appear in. That is something that the broadcast and cable networks were hitting to, in various ways during their presentations in terms of reliability and accountability. And I think they did make some inroads in that area because it has been an issue going on, I mean, back decades. Standard and practices departments at all the broadcasters that had very very great power in the early days of television. The idea that their advertisers that, you know, they're not as concerned as they were years ago that their content appear in that their ads appear in content that's completely mild and completely inoffensive and all of that. I mean, there are many companies now that have moved beyond that, and they do look to having their ads appear in content that's provocative or that takes sides on social issues and so on and so forth. But at the same time, there's still a lot of companies that want to make sure that if that's what they want, that they're going to get that, and it's not going to be, their ads are not going to be appearing in completely offensive and blatantly racist and sexist and violent and offensive content. And I think the new media really hit a bump in the road recently because of the problems they're having in that regard. And I think it's an opportunity for the traditional media to steal back a little share and to throw some sand in the gears for the newcomers for a bit to remind the advertisers how many of them are anxious about where their ads appear.
No question about it, Stuart. That is a very salient point. That has been very front and center over the course of the last several months with Google/YouTube, everything that they've been doing with the videos on there and trying to police where the ads run. And again, there is an awful lot of actual extremism out there, hate speech, whatever, but the net that they have cast right now is so wide, you're even finding things like, I mean, as innocuous and funny as it might say for me to say this, the independent pro wrestling scene is getting caught up in this. Some of their videos, their revenue streams are really being disrupted right now for some of the major independent promotions out there because they're getting caught in the whole thing here of your video might be inappropriate versus, again, you know, it's pro wrestling. It is what it's always been. So it's kind of funny that, you know, where you draw the lines on these things, it's going to be a bumpy process in terms of who should and should not be included in this. But again, go ahead, Simon.
Two more things I also want to get in very quick. One is, going back to diversity, I think it's very interesting that we are seeing more actors and actresses of color form their own production companies. America Ferrari, Jennifer Lopez, Regina King from American Crime, the Emmy winner for that series the last 2 years, Gina Rodriguez, who I thought had one of the outstanding moments of the upfront week when she appeared at the CW basically to say, thank you for diversity, thank you for giving me a chance, but it's time to let step up. I think that was one of the best moments of the big upfront week a couple weeks ago in mid-May. And you're going to see more, I think, as Adam Davis also has their own production company. And Fusion has launched a creative board which is trying to develop the next generation of TV creators of color. And Viola Davis is on that board. Henry Louis Gates Jr. From PBS is on the board. Meryl Streep is on the board. Jodie Foster is. Keep your eye on that particular project. It's very interesting. The second thing is, I think you're going to see more local station groups start testing programs. Fox Today just began the beginning of testing all of her 7 original series that we're trying to put in syndication either weekdays or maybe even in the evening. I think if the broadcast network ratings continue to go down, and they've been going down a lot this past year, The Mariners, by the way, is another big contributor to that. If the rain keeps going down, especially when you have things like My Network TV, which frankly has gotten nowhere with its own rerun schedule on many stations for 2 hours a night, I think you're going to see the local station groups step in there and really start to look at exploring their resources to do more ambitious programming in the evening as well as in syndication. And keep your eye on Sinclair, the biggest TV station group in the country, because right now they're doing on all cylinders in terms of putting original programming on the air. Everything from the Ring of Honor Independent Rest Organization, which they now syndicate, to doing multicast networks at Comic TV with MGM, and a project called TVD, which was doing this, which is all net content, by the way, sort of done in MTV style. And they have the new, the Steve Mosco, the former key person at Sony Television, who really built up that unit. He is now talking with Sinclair about taking a major role, probably to once the Tribune Media deal is done. And by the way, with Tribune Media, we're talking about getting stations like WPX here in New York, KTLA in Los Angeles, WGN in Chicago, WGN in America, that you may see Moscow, if he comes on board, he may have a major, major role to play in making Sinclair a very big power in original programming. And I think, by the way, ultimately, Sinclair wants to do scripted. I know that every day thing is talking about, oh, that, but no. I think at the end of the show, he will make scripted television a major priority for whichever way Sinclair wants to go nationally.
Well, that's very interesting. There's a lot of buzz around them right now, and after the deal with the Tribune Company came out, there was even buzz in a column that I was reading, which I think might be sort of overstating things a little bit, but speculating about them as a possible bidder for some NFL rights the next time around. We'll see if they're able to grow that much in the next couple of years to where that kind of thing could be credible. And also, with what you were saying about diversity, I know this is the show that is furthest away possibly from diversity. It wasn't Masterpiece Theater, but I mourn its passing. Notorious getting canceled by ABC this year, as my fellow Ohio University alum Piper Parabo is out on the street after that show gets canceled. Hate to see that happen. And for what it's worth, my godmother's granddaughter even had a guest starring spot this year. I loved that show. Again, it wasn't Masterpiece Theater, but it was a lot of escapist fun, and I really enjoyed it. As I did, of course, this conversation with you guys. Again, I always marvel when we get done here at the breadth of the things that we're talking about here, the topics, and the ways that you guys are able to dissect them. So, as always, I thank both of you very, very much for your time. This was a blast.
Thank you.
Blast on my end, too. You guys, thanks so much, Stuart. Rick, take care.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much, gentlemen. Really appreciate it. And thank you, everybody, for tuning in to FDH Lounge Mini Episode number 847.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse, and The Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.